Macworld Podcast number 352 for Wednesday, April 24th, 2013. Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Macworld Podcast. I'm Philip Michaels. My voice is raw and strained from screaming at my broker to sell Apple stock, because that's the topic of today's Macworld Podcast. We're talking Apple earnings. And joining me in the Macworld Podcast is Dan Morin. Hello, Dan Morin.
Hi, Phil.
And hey, stranger. It's editorial director Jason Snell.
I don't know why I'm here to talk about your broker.
I don't know why you're here either.
That's very strange.
So instead of talking about my broker, let's talk about Apple. And
fair enough.
And it's appropriate you're here, Jason, because I think you were with Macworld the last time Apple was doomed.
Yeah, I was.
And so I guess my first question to you: how doomed is Apple? Is Michael Spindler like lurking around
warming up in the bullpen,
the Cupertino campus, checking out the corner office? Are we back to the crazy product grids or the clones coming back, Jason?
So
set the stage for us, old man.
I was going to build in back in the day. Now, as I do, I watch CNBC for about 20 minutes a year, and it's the 5 minutes before the Apple release of earnings comes out once a quarter, because they do get those numbers pretty fast. And also, in the meantime, I get to watch what the mainstream media is saying about Apple. And this was actually hilarious because Gene Munster, the analyst, was on there, who basically said Apple is going to be terrible. Get ready for terrible numbers.
I believe this is Piper Jaffray's Gene Munster.
And he is the one who is the Don Quixote of the Apple television, who believes there will be a television set and has been saying so for like the last 10 years.
It's his great pumpkin, yes.
Sooner or later, he will be right.
It could
happen. Sooner or later.
Sure. I mean, and then he's going to say, in your face, losers, just like that guy who said there was going to be an Apple phone in 1993. he was right eventually.
Sure. It's just a matter of time scales.
So there was an analyst on there, though, who – and I didn't get his name, but he was somebody said to him, Maria Bartiromo, or however you pronounce her name.
Bartolomo.
Okay, sure. Maria, we call her. Maria CNBC said, what's wrong with Apple? And in her serious way. And the guy said, Wall Street's wrong with Apple. Apple's fine. Wall Street's the one with the problem. And so I would say to you, something weird is going on here with the Apple stock. And, you know, we are not a financial organization here. We cover technology. And I feel like there are two stories here that are almost happening in opposition. And one is Apple's products and its success in making money. And then there's the value of it on the stock market or as an investment. And this is the time every year where we get asked questions in our live blog yesterday and on Twitter and places like that about Apple as an investment. And what I have to say is, first off, we're not even allowed to invest in technology stocks, let alone Apple.
Yes,
right?
The joke about my broker at the beginning was just a
– yes.
I don't own anything.
And we don't – and you know, our expertise is not in providing investment advice. We write about technology products. Now, we cover Apple's financials because it's interesting as a way to look at what Apple's doing and how healthy it is. But it's not the the same as gauging it as an investment. So I would say, you know, yeah, these is Apple doom questions. If you look at the stock, it's lost all this value. If you look at its sales figures, it's doing great. The amount of money that Apple is making is still billions of dollars, billions and billions and billions of dollars. To quote
Carl Sagan. Well, and it's always a moving target for them too, because I remember a couple years ago the big thing was, why is Apple sitting on all these $100 billion worth in cash? Why don't they do something with it? And you know, then they announced last year that they were going to start issuing dividends and buying back shares, which they have now hugely increased. So now that we've dealt with that problem, the analysts have to move on to their next complaint.
Well, if I can put on my old dusty financial reporter hat.
Yes, you actually used to cover.
I used to do this thing for a living long in the before time, back when Apple was doomed the first time.
Yeah, good times.
And Wall Street investors, and this is an oversimplification, but they're looking for growth opportunities, and specifically looking for earnings growth. And the fact of the matter is, when you're a company that brings in $43.6 billion in what's really kind of a slow quarter for you,
there is not a lot of room.
Apple has reached the stage in a company's life where it's a behemoth, And it's where you go and you park your money because it's a safe pair of hands.
And this is why stock prices are not the same as whether a company is healthy, because
right.
it has to do with the investment outlook of these people who want to put in money and have it grow. So there's a false equivalency there.
Right.
And that extends then to how the media covers Apple. Mm-hmm. There's a whole – I read a story this morning that tried to spin in my local newspaper, tried to spin the Apple numbers in the most negative way possible, even though they were actually really quite positive. Even the people who were saying they were going to be bad said, well, actually they weren't bad. Maybe the next quarter will be bad, but this one is not. But they kind of conflate the story of the stock. Oh, it's one of the worst performing stocks of the year and it's under pressure from competition from Samsung. And it's like, the what? Those are not, they're just, but, it's complicated. And so you try to tell a story. And this is a narrative to, about Apple kind of falling apart. But if you look at the numbers, Apple's not falling apart. Apple's not doomed. I believe somebody calculated that if Apple just sat on its cash hoard and did nothing and sold no products and made no money, it could survive on its cash for a decade. So it's not doomed. That's not to say there aren't concerns about its competitiveness, but you look at the numbers, and I hope we can dive into them here pretty soon. And Apple's doing pretty well, despite all the talk about, oh, Samsung is really coming on and Apple's losing out to Android. If you look at the money Apple is making and the growth it has in some markets, Apple's doing a pretty good job.
That segues perfectly into me talking about the numbers, which for the quarter were $43.6 billion in revenue. That was up 11% from the March quarter a year ago. And we'll talk about that March quarter, I'm sure, in depth, the 2012 one. The eye-catching thing was Apple's net income, which was $9.5 billion, and that was down from $11.6 billion in the year ago quarter.
Right.
I think that's a drop of 18%. My math might be off there. iPad sales up hugely, iPhone sales up a little bit in terms of unit sales, Mac sales kind of flat, a little bit less than a year ago.
Essentially flat.
Yeah, and that's sort of the That's sort of Apple's financial picture in about 15 seconds of your life. And the guidance for the next quarter is between $33.5 and $35.5 billion in revenue, which would put it flat with what it did in the third quarter of 2012, although Apple notoriously lowballs what it's going to.
Yeah, although they said –
although they claim they no longer do that.
They claim a lot of things. Anyhow.
Well, the bigger part of that being, of course, they've changed what they forecast, right? They forecast revenues. They no longer forecast their earnings,
right?
Which does mean there's a little more room to play there for the analysts who want to, come up conjecture based on what they think they'll make.
So now that we've gone over just the rough figures, what are the positives that we see in that performance?
Well, the positives include they sold a ton of iPads, right? I mean, like that's the big thing, right? They sold 19 million, almost getting pretty close to 20 million there. I mean, that's pretty close to last quarter, which was a holiday quarter.
Last quarter was the holiday quarter.
Okay.
Apple is on a September financial year.
Its financial year
ends in September, so that can throw off this first quarter, second quarter business. But yes, the first quarter of the year is the holiday quarter.
So, and they move, according to our charts, about 23 million iPads last quarter. So that's pretty close. And a lot of that obviously was chalked up to the iPad mini, I think, because Tim Cook said they were able to finally start delivering those in the quantities in which people were ordering them. They were a little short on supply for a while there. But the problem, the difficulty there, the challenge is that the iPad mini is obviously a lot less profitable for Apple because they're just shaving it much closer.
It's a lower margin product. And this is one of those amazing kind of Apple narrative dichotomies that you see, which is we have simultaneously them railing on Apple for not having enough products in the market and saying, well, you need to compete with Samsung. You need more products. You need a smaller iPad. You need a bigger iPhone. You need all this stuff. But, don't let your margins erode. Apple with the iPad mini made a decision that I think is turning out to be a really good decision for a really great product. And it worked. They sold a lot of them. But their margins went down. Their profit margin went down because they're not making as much on the iPad mini. So, that's the line Apple has always walked, is they want to be profitable. you know, they don't want to cede the market because they're going to give up portions of market share. Apple's willing to give up some market share, but it doesn't want to give up market share that it finds valuable. And so with the iPad mini, it made a decision to go down that path of creating a successful product that might be a little less profitable in the short term. And so that's where we are. And that's why the revenues are up and the profits are down a little bit year over year that's the reason, is that the margins are less.
Right, and the iPhone sales also did very well this past quarter.
Very well.
I mean, 37.4 million is a lot, and
considering you haven't come out with a new phone for a bit.
Yeah, that's a year-over-year increase, and it's I think if I'm doing my math right here, it's the second largest iPhone sales quarter ever. Only last quarter, which was holiday quarter, and
had the iPhone 5
release,
was really sort of the big highlight there. And I mean, and more to the point, you know, we're talking. Phil mentioned they hadn't released an iPhone in a while. More to the point, Apple hasn't released anything in this quarter. Anything. Literally, the only thing I looked through our records, the only things I could find are the 128 gig iPad, and there was an under the hood upgrade to the Apple TV that was not even like a substantial, like literally they changed a chip in it, like, and didn't tell anybody. So I mean, between those two things, somehow they still sold, you know, tens of millions of products.
And I should point out, I didn't mention this when going over the numbers, that that revenue total for the quarter was a record for the March quarter.
Yeah,
that was the
doom.
Most.
Yeah. There's doom right there. Yeah, their profits were down year over year. Although that's a weird aberration. If you look at the second quarter profits historically, and I posted something on Twitter yesterday about it. If you take out last year's second quarter. The second quarter revenue growth is actually steady, but last year's or profit growth, but last year's profit was second quarter profit was crazy.
The second quarter of 2012 was what we call an outlier.
Yeah, it
in the
was
business.
Definitely an outlier. So people are freaking out about how there's the year over year profit drop from Apple for the first time in a long time, but it's looking to me like. It's actually in line with the path that was happening in previous years, and that second quarter was just an aberration. Mm-hmm. This puts the lie to the whole concept that Apple has to release a product to drive sales, because Apple has done a very good job of spreading sales out. And maybe some of that is a failure to fulfill all the demand that they've got, because that's a constant on the call, is them regrets about their supply chain this time.
And in fact, that was something Tim Cook mentioned in the
– He had a melancholy moment.
A little wistful. Oh, we should have held that iMac.
Yeah, well, the iMac was a mistake, right? Because they announced it in what?
December?
October.
Oh, right. October. It shipped in December.
And they couldn't ship it until December. And in fact, the big one didn't ship until the very end of December. And the little one shipped right before Christmas.
Neither of them were in any sort of quantity until after the new year. I mean, so there were still huge constraints on them. So, I mean,
they shouldn't have announced them.
Yeah. It was interesting, though, that he pointed out that as a mitigation to a certain extent of the Mac figure. It sounded like, if I'm recalling this correctly, that the portables actually took a drop in the past quarter, and the iMac sold pretty well, but that they still end up slightly, you know, flat to slightly down. So I think it's clear that, you know, there was demand for that iMac, certainly. And that's unusual because we've seen the desktop market sort of constrict a lot in the last few years.
Right. I was going to ask this later on in the podcast, but we might as well bring it up now since we're talking the Mac business. I believe IDC said the overall PC market contracted by about 14% in the January to March quarter. Apple slightly down, but essentially flat. And one of the points Tim Cook brought up in the Q&A session was that they still see a lot of potential. They don't view the Mac business or the PC business in general as a dead business, and that there's still a lot to do there. Do we agree with him, or is he whistling past the graveyard?
I think that the trick here is that it's certainly a lot more of a mature market. I mean, PCs have been on the desktop for, you know, 20, 30 years now. So we've seen a lot of innovation there, and it's slowed, right? I mean, innovation has clearly slowed. It's not dead, but the innovation right now is happening in the mobile space, in the portable space. And in some ways, I always think it funny. Something that occurs to me every time I go into our behind-the-scenes little CMS, I'm filling out categories, and I enter the computers category, which I always find kind of hilarious because it's like, well, technically, all these, you know, smartphones, tablets, they're all computers, right? Like, really? It's just that they come in a different shape box. So I think this idea of having a computer that sits on your lap or sits on your desk, it's common, but it's not where the action is. And so there's certainly a chance for them to do things like they pointed out, the Retina display on the iMac and the Mac Pro, or sorry, on the MacBooks. And so I think that's a big part of it. You know, they're looking at what can we sort of wring out of this that we still have left. And people are going to have these things, but I think it all goes back to that Steve Jobs analogy from a few years ago, where he compared the PC is more of a truck to the car that is your mobile device, your smartphone. You're going to take those things with you no matter where you go. And maybe it's, you know, less frequently you're using that desktop or that laptop, but there's still times when you need that thing. So they're going to try to figure out sort of where's the remaining play in that market.
I think Dan has figured out the strategy for Dell, Lenovo, and HP now, which is to create computers that can fit inside a tablet-shaped box.
I thought you were going to say they should make trucks.
And yes. Then
like, just go straight for it.
Problem solved.
Use more car metaphors,
so,
please.
See, I think it's interesting to look at this that Cook was saying, you know, maybe when we're in a world where people are using tablets and smartphones more, that opens up more of a market for Apple, because Apple's still innovating on laptops and desktops in a way that most of the PC makers have sort of given up. And that once your computing life is spread across a tablet and a smartphone, I think whether it's an Apple or even an Android tablet or smartphone, your tie to Windows is less, and you may have less concern about platform, and then the Macs are more innovative and interesting, and they may sell more Macs. So I think he's considering that there may be some cannibalization here, which I think is not a bad idea. I think if Apple is the only one that is doing anything notable in computers, as computers become less relevant, or sorry Dan, PCs and Macs become less relevant to the overall population, there's an opportunity for Apple there that you may see that there are like corporate fleets of computers that are PCs from Dell or HP, and that in the consumer market, Apple may just keep on just taking more and more of that market, because if you're just a person who wants a computer, you may just go into the Apple store and buy it. I think there's a big opportunity for there. But let's all be clear here. I think, you know, computers over time, as we think of them now, are going to become less relevant to a lot of people's lives. Quite frankly, the only things that I use my computer for now that mandate that I use it are editing audio and video stuff and like managing a giant photo library. I've got a few things, but I can count them now. And for a lot of people, they just don't have that need at all, or they won't have that need soon. So, you know, I think the Mac has some business opportunity here, and I think it's great that Apple is still investing in innovation on the Mac side. But, you know, there's a reason Apple's so much of Apple's business now is in tablets and smartphones.
And on the number side, I mean, if you look at that overall picture from the last couple of years, 4 million is pretty much about where they're sitting most quarters when it comes to Mac sales. So they're slightly down, but they did, you know, in the last five quarters, they've done, you know, four quarters they're within, you know, 100,000 of 4 million. So Mac sales are steady. I mean, like, and that's pretty
steady,
good.
Steady in a dropping market.
Yeah, and sure. they repeatedly outperform the overall PC market.
Yeah, well,
which is a point Apple likes to make.
Yeah, every so often somebody asks me about how Macworld is doing, like on the newsstand, and I'll say, well, the newsstand magazine market is terrible, and so you know, Macworld even staying steady or going down a little bit is way better than everybody else, right? And it's the same scenario here. It's you're in a market that is changing, and sometimes being steady is great because your competition isn't.
In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
said Tim Cook with an eye patch.
The one button mouse is king.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so Apple isn't doomed, and we're all there are positives to be found in these numbers. Are there any areas of concern in Apple's earnings performance from this past quarter? First time in a decade that income has fallen year over year. Back then, I was looking up the article. It was 2003. Fred Anderson was the chief financial officer. There was no iTunes store at the time. They had just come out with the iPod was just taking off then. It was an interesting time.
Those iPod sales are
and you could buy Apple stock for $13 a share. in 2003.
Yeah. The iPod is an interesting question, too, because it's one of those things where it's like, it just, you know, it keeps getting smaller and smaller, but they're not going to get rid of it.
It still exists.
Right. And essentially,
speaking of the one-eyed man in the kingdom of the blind.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're doing quite well in that space, but it is one of those spaces that eventually is probably going to cease to exist. But they've done such a good job of moving over to, you know, smartphones and tablets that it doesn't matter. Like, you know, 10 years ago, if we'd said, oh, the iPod market's going to crash, everyone would have been like, then their Apple is doomed. But now, you know, nobody even remembers the iPod. Right. Poor iPod.
But traditional iPods are you know, all but gone. I mean, it's 5.6 million.
Half of which is the iPod Touch, right?
I think they said most. So,
most. Okay, yeah. So like 90%.
I would assume they also do a fair business with the shuffles, just because the shuffle serves a very specific purpose.
I don't know.
I can't imagine that the Nano and the old faithful.
That classic. It's driving. Yeah.
It's like DJs and runners.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to say, and this is veering a little bit from trouble spots, but it was also, they talked a lot about services this time, which was unusual for them because they talked about how much money they were bringing in for all the stores combined in that it was significant enough. You know, in the past, they've often said they run the stores at break even or slightly above break even. And this time they were touting what it was like $4 billion in revenue.
Right.
I think for the quarter.
Yeah, I think that was $4 billion for all of their digital.
All the services.
Right.
Which is, I mean, nothing to sneeze at.
No.
And so, I mean, the services are an interesting point because I think they are very important to the ecosystem, which is, you know, I think we've seen a lot of talk about in the recent days of Apple and its ecosystem being sort of the most important component of what it does. It's not just it's not any individual piece of hardware or software, but it's the combination of the hardware and software and services. And the services often get short shrift in part because, you know, some of them fail spectacularly from time to time. You know, they aren't necessarily moneymakers, but we're seeing, you know, especially now that we're right around the corner from the 10th anniversary of the iTunes store, which I believe they brought up on the call. It's interesting to realize how much of that behind the scenes is very, very important to Apple's success in selling its products. It's just that it can put together an experience. And they talked a lot about experience and that being a really important part. And that's what they thought they could bring to the table and these things that other companies can't do. So it's interesting to me that there was such a high emphasis on that this time around.
Any concerns about mind share and market share in the smartphone business? I know that some of the Wall Street analysts were trying to make some hay there in the question and answer period with Android muscling aside the iPhone in some areas. Jason has a lemony look on his face.
He has a lemony look.
There was a Twitter troll yesterday who kept asking me, and I was gonna mute him for my Twitter list, and I found out he was already muted, and yet he was still appearing. So I blocked him. But he was like, Apple, back a few, for the last 10 years, Apple has had 100% mind share, but they've lost it now. And it's like, you know, okay, no, in so many different ways, that's not accurate. You know, Apple does have competition, although Apple's had competition for a while now. 3 years ago, it was like, oh, what's going to happen with droids? The droids are going to take over. And now it's, oh, Samsung. And Samsung knows how to make money in the mobile phone market, and Apple knows how to make money in the mobile phone market. I'm not quite sure if you look at the numbers, you can't say that anything has happened other than Samsung eating away the lunch of all the other Android phone makers in terms of profits. So, you know, Apple has competitors. Apple was not going to sit there with the only smartphone for 10 years. It was not going to happen. I think Apple needs to keep innovating with iOS. I think Apple needs to keep innovating with their hardware. But I think you see people who want to tell this story, and it always comes back to, why can't Apple be like somebody else? So it's like, why can't Apple be like Samsung and have 15 different handsets? Well, Apple's not Samsung. Apple doesn't have the people that Samsung has. It doesn't have the same product mix that Samsung has. It's a very different kind of company.
And if you look at the numbers, it's being Samsung.
Doing pretty well, like pretty darn well with its business. So there's a lot of confusion, and the Macalope goes into this on a regular basis on Macworld.com, that there's this confusion that market share somehow directly leads to a business's success. And there's some companies out there that have lots of market share in Android and aren't making any money. And Apple doesn't play that game. Apple's goal, like I said earlier, they want to walk that line. They don't want to give away people who could be in their ecosystem. But at the same time, if there's a market like the netbook market back in the day that was like, we can sell a lot of these things and not make any money on them, Apple's not interested. They don't play that game. They're not interested in that game. It's not what they do. And so, you know, I do think Apple's got stuff it needs to do, but I don't think that we need to sit here and say Apple needs to be like other companies, or every year Apple needs to come up with a category redefining product, because that's not real either. That's another invented thing that people have made up to fit this narrative.
Speaking of new products and Apple coming up with them, it sounds like if you do like new products, you're gonna be in for a little bit of a wait, according to Tim Cook, when he was pressed for details on what Apple has in its pipeline, and Apple is enthusiastic about its upcoming products. The phrase he kept using is, "We've got a great lineup of products for fall, this fall, and well into 2014, but we're only in April, friends. Fall is 6 months away.
It's not even summer
so
yet.
So long to wait." Well, there are a number of places. I mean, and he did talk at some point. There are a couple tips of the hat towards new product categories as well, and which for them, you know, often means really something different, something that is not what they are already doing.
But an Apple TV?
Well, Gene Munster, I'm glad you asked.
Gene Munster has to be sad now that whenever they say new product category, people say watch instead of television set. It's like,
well,
no!
He tried to nail down Tim Cook yesterday, which was kind of hilarious, because there were a couple really awkward silences when he was asking his question. I heard you say new product category, right?
We're already in that business.
Right.
With the Apple TV.
So, yeah, but it does sound like the fall is really when they're targeting. And that's not so shocking. I mean, Apple had a really big fall last year. And so a lot of their products have seen refreshes recently, because we got the iPad mini and we got the iPhone 5 and we got the new iMac. You know, we got all that stuff. I think the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display too. We got all that like in September and October. So we're not... We're just sort of hitting the point now where we've got like the 6 month window of like, well, do they issue minor updates? Do they speed bump their Macs and stuff like that? But releasing a new phone or a new tablet in 6 months, though they did it last year with the fourth generation iPad, which was kind of a strange aberration, I don't think that we're at that point yet where they're really gotten down to that. I mean, they really seem to be releasing, especially the iPads and the iPhones, on sort of a yearly basis. So in that way, it's not shocking that we're going to wait till fall to see something like that. The big question for me, and obviously on Wednesday morning, we had the announcement about WWDC for this year, which will happen in June, and which did say that basically, you know, developers will get a chance to play with new versions of iOS and OS X. So I think this summer is really going to be, it seems like, software focused to me.
Right.
So maybe we'll see announcements about that, and then, you know, something will ship later in the summer, but that the hardware is going to come after.
And well, this has been the path they've been on for a little while now, right? Which is you do right. Your OS releases in the summer. You actually give the developers the summer to stay inside and not get a sunburn because they're very pale. And I love developers, but come on. So they stay inside, except for Craig Hockenberry, who will be like diving somewhere. And then in the fall, the new OS will ship with the new hardware, which is what you want, right? You don't want to do what they did with the iPad, where the iPad came out in the spring and it had the old OS on it. And when the exciting new OS came out in the fall, the iPad users were like, well, no, you need to wait a little while, right? It was right. You don't want to have them out of sync like that. So it does make a lot of sense for Apple to do that.
It would not be shocking. And you can tell me if it would be shocking if at WWDC in June, Apple were to say, come out with that rumored Mac Pro successor that Tim Cook alluded to in Legend and Song a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's a developer audience is one of their primary professional audiences, right? Aside from sort of, you know, pro-level creatives like video and things like that. And so the developers are a huge swath of that, and they are people who will respond very positively to that. Whereas I can very easily imagine if Apple tried to throw a press conference and was like, all right, we're here to talk about the new Mac Pro, you get a lot of people, you know, in the press going, what? No iPhones, no iPads. What are we here for? I mean, the Mac Pro is a niche of a you know market that we were already discussing is steady to down. So, you know, taking a small slice of that is not exactly going to set the press on fire. But the developers, I think, will really appreciate it, especially if it's coupled with, hey, we're here today to talk to you about this new version of OS X you can guys develop for, and here's some hardware you can do your development on. Sold, done. You know, I think that's what we're looking at.
So we We started out the podcast by talking about how Apple is doomed. I thought we could finish by talking about whether Tim Cook is doomed, because that seems to be the narrative in the business press right now. Depending on whom you read, he's either on thin ice or they're already talking successors, and it seems crazy talk to me. But if we ruled out crazy talk, what would we have to giggle about amongst ourselves? So is it your perception at all, Jason, that we're about to have a leadership shakeup at Apple?
Wasn't it established that the person who was the source of this was like somebody who had links to Samsung, and they were like – I mean, it's made up, or no, it was somebody who's short on Apple who was making a profit on Apple stock going down. That's what's going on here. It has no basis in reality. The Apple continues to make money, and in the way Steve Jobs structured Apple's board, I mean, Apple's right. board is not one of these groups that's all about outsiders who are underwater with their stock. You know, with their shares, and that's just not how Apple and its board of directors operates. I Apple's still a machine that makes huge amounts of money, and Apple's not a company that fires its CEO because the stock price went down. Yeah. Because if it was, it wouldn't be Apple; it would be some other terrible company.
None of those people on that board are going to vote to throw out Tim Cook. Not a single person on the board is dumb enough to throw out Tim Cook. I mean, you know, like Jason's saying, that board is there for a reason, and, you know, it's filled with a lot of smart people who are there to advise on certain capacities, but none of them are – this is not the Apple board that's going to, like, stage a coup. You know, this is not the John Sculley throws out Steve Jobs narrative.
No, Steve Jobs learned his lesson there, I think, and the way the board is constructed. People on the board know how Apple works and know what Apple's about, and, you know, you actually – that's been influential. You see that a lot on other tech company boards, I think Google being the best example, where – when they went public, they said, look, we're not going to – you know, we're in this for the long term, and we're not going to listen to investors who are freaking out about the share price, because we're going to look at the big picture. And I think that's true with Apple too.
Well, and keep in mind – and I think this dovetails nicely into that – this whole effort by Apple to repurchase so much stock, it seems like to a certain extent that there's an amount of control going on, right? We – you know, in terms of having – consolidating and investing in Apple. But I think I'm not as well versed in the corporate governance issues, but, you know, at a certain point, you know, if they reduce the amount of stock, they reduce the amount of, you know, complaints about this from investors. So I wonder if that's not a part of it, is like, you know, we want to make ourselves less dependent on the sort of the whims of the market.
I will note that John Sculley is available for any CEO position.
We got a great one. Sculley, Emilio's probably still around.
They should create a three president structure, yes. Like BlackBerry had.
Yeah. Well, co-CEOs.
If one head is good, then three heads must be better.
Spindler, Sculley, Emilio.
Yeah. A triumvirate, Sculley, Emilio, like ancient Rome.
Yeah. That went great for them, by the way.
It worked out well. The Roman Empire has never been better.
Is Rome doomed?
Flourishing today.
I think the fact that we're talking about ancient Rome now signals that we've pretty much discussed all of Apple's earnings that we can.
Yeah, I have one last point that I wanted to make. But wait, there's more.
No, sir. Go right ahead.
Just that when we were talking about growth, and we're talking about growth potential, and you said investors look for growth, mm-hmm. The one number that impressed me was that Apple's growth in China, which they now break out the Greater China region, it was the best quarter that they've had in Greater China. They did $8.8 billion in revenue in Greater China, up 11% year on year. And one of the knocks on Apple in the past has been that it did a bad job in China, and that it couldn't crack China, and it couldn't figure out and its strategy of having premium products wouldn't work in China because people in China are going to buy, you know, cheaply made Chinese products. Well, Apple has focused on China, and Apple is succeeding in China. And so people who are saying that Apple has growth limitations because they've been so successful in the past and how much more room is there, I guess I would point to China and say it looks to me like Apple is really getting into China. I think we've seen some attempts for Apple to turn around the iPhone's fate in India, where it hasn't been much of a player.
Brazil as well.
and in Brazil. So Apple is the knock on Apple. One of the knocks on Apple was always that it wasn't going to ever work in emerging markets. And I don't think it's true. And I think China is a good example. That may have been true in the past, but they are really focused on those three markets especially. And they're having great success in China. And there's a lot of people in China. So I think that's a really good sign for Apple's future growth.
There's a lot of people in China, and with insights like that, I think we will.
Yes.
I think we can bring this podcast to a conclusion. Thank you very much, Jason Snell, for stopping by.
I'm happy to be here.
Don't be a stranger.
I will not.
And Dan Morin, thank you as always for joining us.
Why? Thank you, Phil.
And thank you, listener.
Most of all,
because you're here every week, as are we. And we'll be back next week with the Macworld podcast. Until then, take care.